Welcome to St. Paul's 2019 Lenten Podcast, an audio companion for the Lenten season, as together we explore the spiritual practices of prayer and pilgrimage. Each week we'll hear Senior Pastor Reverend Tommy Williams in conversation with special guests. This episode is part two of a three-part conversation, where Reverend Williams talks with Frederica Matthews Green, author and speaker in the Eastern Orthodox tradition. We'll pick up where we left off last week.
I wonder if, are there places, I mean physical places and spaces, that for you are more conducive to moments of prayer? Are there places that you journey to, that you pilgrim to, that really, facilitate times of prayer? Are there places where you locate yourself in the morning, noon, and evening, or is it just hey, this is something I can do anywhere?
It's funny because it does need to be both. That you need to be able to pray anywhere because you might find yourself anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it does help to have a physical location. And it's been there are kind of two aspects of that. One is the travel to go on a pilgrimage, and the other is setting aside a place in your home. Both of these are very ancient Christian practices, that they would go to the places where the great saints had lived and preached and died for their faith. And there seems to be, in some of these places, you do get a sense of holiness there, Jacob saying, you know, truly the Lord was in this place and I didn't know it. How awesome is this place? There are places like that that you can go to, that you can really sense that power. One that people in the Orthodox Church often refer to is in San Francisco, there's the cathedral, the Russian Orthodox Cathedral, where a saint is buried who died in, I think, 1966. It was in the 60s. Father John Maximovich, who grew up in Russia, spent some time as a bishop in Paris, and then bishop in Shanghai, and then finally a bishop in San Francisco. And he's widely known as someone who is a powerful prayer warrior. Many miracles have been associated with visiting his tomb. And people who go there say they just sense the power of his prayer. Even there, even though he's been dead for decades now. Because really, the saints are alive in Christ. They're actually not visible to us, but they're not dead. And they can spend all their time praying. They don't have any distractions from prayer. So that would be an example of a place where you might go on pilgrimage, that you would go to a place where some tremendous event of Christian history happened, that you might go to a place where somebody that you greatly admire, you know, as an Orthodox, I would call them saints, but maybe you just call it this person that you admire so much.
Sure.
You might go to their tomb and to pray there. And going to monasteries, I was going to say, is another thing that's very important in Christian history, whether it's a men's or a women's monastery. We don't look at monks and nuns as people who have retreated from the world just to protect themselves. Rather, it's like they're going into training like Olympic athletes, and they are training themselves to pray without ceasing and to pray hard and to be dauntless and to defeat the evil one who comes against us in so many forms. Among Orthodox Christians, it's common to visit a monastery from time to time, just kind of to soak up the prayer power of that place and to talk to people who are doing it full-time, like athletes. That's the analogy St. Paul uses several times, is that we're like athletes. You can get good advice about prayer, for example, if you get a chance to talk to a monk or a nun at a monastery. So there's going to a place. The other thing I wanted to mention is having a place in your own home. And traditionally among Orthodox, there's a room there's a corner or a place on the wall in one of your living rooms, a place that people would see when they came to visit, where you set up some pictures of Christ. You might have some candles or even a little incense burner. pictures of other great saints or people that you admired who are examples to you as brothers and sisters in Christ. Maybe some prayer books. You can have a lot of different things there that help you practice your faith. And that would be a place you could go to maybe in the morning before you leave for the day to think over before the Lord everything you expect to encounter and to entrust it all to Him. If you have a physical location like that in your house, mm-hmm. it really reminds you of the Lord. And, of course, we Orthodox love icons, and we scatter icons all over our house. And you have one above the television. You have one above your computer screen. You want the Lord watching you at all times. You want to remember that He is watching you at all times. Mm-hmm. So a particular, what we call a prayer corner or an icon corner, but then also having the images that you love of the Lord. You can search for images on Google Images and print them out. That's what I do. And then just glue it to a piece of cardboard and stick it on the wall. And to be reminded of the presence of the Lord all over your house is a great help in learning how to pray without ceasing.
Thanks for helping with some resources there. That's good counsel for those who are listening. Thank you. Mm-hmm. At St. Paul's here, we have a labyrinth outside, a labyrinth ancient walking path that's on the corner. St. Paul's sits at the corner of Main Street and what's known as Benz Street in Houston. It's just south coming out of downtown Houston. And it's right, the labyrinth is right on the corner of those streets in a very busy part of Houston. We're always so inspired by the ways that people around the city will journey into that labyrinth space, and they may have no experience whatsoever with the church, or at least not yet, but journey into that labyrinth space and walk around it for quiet right here in the midst of a bustling city. And I know during the Lenten season, there will be many, many who will retreat and find their way there.
That's wonderful. Yes, we have a... It's a Romanian Orthodox custom to have a very large cross, a big oak cross, outside your church, and we see people stop there for prayer all the time. It's good to have those visible landmarks, I think, so that Christians and non-Christians alike will see the witness of the cross, the witness of Christian faith in a visible way.
Right, a visible presence that welcomes a community that's accessible to everyone. It's not located behind a door somewhere, which is wonderful. Well, Frederica, you mentioned earlier about the Jesus Prayer, and of course you've got a wonderful book on that. I wonder, and it sounds like it's obviously part of your daily practice of prayer. I wonder if are there other phrases, sentences, disciplines that you use on a regular basis in addition to it? What other mantras would you offer?
Yes, one of the things we do, Orthodox Christians, is to fast on a regular basis. And when I was Protestant, to me, fasting meant that you set aside a day and you don't eat at all, you know, just no eating. It has a different meaning in the Christian East. Fasting means abstaining from meat and cheese, all dairy products, and basically adhering to a vegan diet. So we do this, of course, during the period of Lent, the 6 weeks before Easter, Pascha, and we do it for the 6 weeks before Christmas and a couple of other times during the year. But in addition to that, every Wednesday and every Friday, it turns out that we are actually keeping this vegan fast. It's a little bit more than half the days of the year. And it seemed strange to me at first because it didn't really seem like a discipline the way when I was growing up Catholic and you would give up your favorite food for Lent. So in this case, you're giving up cheese, but you can eat lobster, you know, you can eat shellfish. It was hard to figure out how it was supposed to work. And for us as a new Orthodox church, it was kind of like being the littlest brother in a big family. And we just had to say, okay, this is how the family does it, and we're going to do it. And we found that a lot of the power is just in making that decision. And in joining in with what everybody else is doing and joining this extremely ancient practice of observing these fasts, it's not a punishment, and it's not that these are, you know, bad foods or forbidden foods. It's if it was, then we wouldn't start eating them again on Easter, you know, on the holiest day of the year. It's more like the athlete, like I was saying before. It's you try to resist having a cheeseburger on Friday, and it strengthens your willpower muscle. So then when you're driving home on Friday and you get mad at the guy in front of you, it helps you resist expressing your anger because you're growing in self-control. And the thing about it is you're supposed to, with the guidance of your pastor, adjust the fast so it's just right for you. You know, this is the overall goal is to keep a vegan diet. But, you know, if that's just making you so cranky, if you're more angry than you usually would be, then you go to your pastor, you talk about it privately, and he will say, let's adjust it in this way and that way, and, you know, don't try to do too much. My husband, a pastor, always says, it's meant to strengthen you, you know, like weightlifting. It's meant to strengthen you, not to break you.
Right.
You wouldn't go into a spa and immediately expect to pick up the 200-pound barbell. You want to do what will make you gradually get stronger and stronger. So these little challenges that disgruntle us and that challenge our freedom to choose whatever we want at any moment to delight and amuse ourselves. These little acts of resistance, they do strengthen us, and it's so wonderful that we're doing it in the company of other Christians all over the world, of other Christians all over your church. It helps us to come to coffee hour during Lent and see all the different foods people have prepared that are vegan. You know, a chocolate cream pie that's made with tofu. It's wonderful, the ingredients and the recipes people come up with. We're all struggling together is the thing. Mm. And that is a kind of communal strength. Helps you want to observe the fasting because you don't want to let everybody else down. You know, we're all as strong as the weakest link, so we try to hold together. That's an example of something else, another spiritual discipline that I use that has proved very fruitful for me. I know it sounds pretty strange the first time you hear of it.
Oh, thank you. No, it sounds wise, and I love how you've rooted it into community and that practicing it, obviously, in community with others builds a mutual strength and faithfulness together.
Thank you for listening, and we hope you'll join us next week as Reverend Tommy Williams and Frederica Matthews Green wrap up their conversation about prayer. For more information about Lent at St. Paul's, including worship services and faith formation happening this season, visit www.stpaulshouston.org/Lent. Thanks for listening.